Welcome to Shir Ramban, Parshas HaShavua, Parshas VaYeshev. Wanted to take a look today at two passages in the Ramban, both in the difficult to understand story that relates to Yehuda and Tamar and the like. Both of these Rambans touch on issues that go far beyond the story of Yehuda and Tamar directly and have a lot of wider applicability. So the pasuk says in Perek Lamed Ches, pasuk Ches, thank you, that after Er, who's the first of Yehuda's sons, who's married to Tamar, passes away, Vayomer Yehuda laOnan, Yehuda says to Onan, Er's brother, Bo el Eshes Ochicha, marry your brother's wife, Yabemosa, and perform the concept of Yibum, levirate marriage with her. Behokem Zera Leochicha. And in that way, you will establish seed, you will establish children for your brother. What's the meaning of that last phrase, Behokem Zera Leochicha? So Rashi comments on that pasuk, Habein Yikare Al Shem Hames. It means that when Onan marries Tamar and they have a child, so the child will be named after the brother who had passed away, which would seem to imply that if Onan and Tamar have a boy together, the name of the boy is going to be Er. We'll see. That's the way the Ramban understands Rashi. It's quite possible that Rashi did not mean that himself. But that we'll see in a moment is the way the Ramban seems to understand Rashi. Ein ze emes, says the Ramban, referring to this Rashi, it's not correct. Ki b'mitzvos haTorah nemar gamken yakum al shem achiv hames. When the Torah later on in Sefer Devarim describes the mitzvah of Yibum, of levirate marriage, you know, which is again similar to what's going on over here, the Torah uses a similar kind of terminology. The firstborn son who's born to the new union, Yakum al Shem Achiv Hames, will take the place using the name of the brother who passed away, Yisrael, and the name of that brother who passed away will not be blotted out from Israel. And says the Ramban, it's simply not true that the younger brother or the other brother who marries the widow has an obligation to call his newborn son after the name of the one who passed away. To give a somewhat parallel example, for Omar B'Boaz, if you take a look in Megillat Rus, where again there's something somewhat similar to Yibum, it's not full-fledged Yibum, because after all, Yibum involves two brothers. When Boaz marries Ruth, he's a relative, he's not a brother, but there's a similar kind of idea that Boaz's marrying of Ruth is somehow carrying on the family name. The pasuk says, V'gamas Ruth ha-Moaviyah, Eishes Machlon Konisi Li L'Isha. Boaz says, I have acquired Ruth ha-Moaviyah, the widow of Machlon, Lahokim Shem Ha'es Hames Al Nachloso, in order to establish the name of Machlon who passed away in with regard to his inheritance, V'lo Yikares Shem Hames Me'im Echav U'Mishar Mekomo, right? And this way, the name of the deceased Machlon will never be cut off from the rest of his brethren or from his place, you know, from his place in the gate. In other words, it's a somewhat similar terminology where Boaz says that by virtue of my marrying Ruth, I will perpetuate the name of Machlon. Okay, good. So Boaz and Ruth have a son. And what do they call the son? Oved. Okay, maybe Oved is a nickname for Machlon. That's a little bit hard to see how that would be the case exactly, right? But you would expect, says the Ramban, if we understand, you know, Rashi literally, the way Rashi seems to say over here, that the child who's born to a marriage, which is the Yibum marriage, is going to carry the name of the deceased, Haben Yikare Al Shem Hames, that the son will be called by the name of the deceased. So we would expect that in the parallel kind of situation, which we have in Megillas Ruth, so the child born to Boaz and Ruth should have been named Machlon. And yet we see that he's named Oved, so clearly says the Ramban, what Rashi is suggesting over here is not true. Now, it's very, very possible to suggest that, you know, the Ramban's interpretation of Rashi is not what Rashi meant to say. When Rashi says that Abeni Kore Al Shem Hanes, that the child who's born to the product of the Yibum marriage will be called Al Shem Hanes by the name, or to memorialize the person who passed away, it doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, he's going to bear the name of the person who passed away. It means something else. What does it mean, something else? Okay, so maybe we can suggest that when people see this child, they say, okay, so there's a, you know, there's some remnant of the person who passed away. You know, he carries, if not the name, he carries the legacy, he carries on the tradition of the person who passed away. But perhaps the reason the Ramban was unsatisfied in interpreting Rashi in that way is for the following very simple reason. What does that mean? I mean, other than, you know, a rabbi's drasha about how beautiful it is that the child is carrying on the tradition, and, you know, he's carrying on the legacy and all these other beautiful words that we're going to use, if the child doesn't actually carry the actual name of the person who passed away, what does it mean, tachlis, in real terms, what does it mean? That haben yikare al shem achiv hames, that the child is going to be called, you know, based on the name of the one who passed away. If you don't interpret it as meaning the actual name, it becomes a little bit amorphous, you know, to define what it means. So the Ramban says, what Rashi Mestama means is that he carries the actual name of the person who passed away, says the Ramban, but that's wrong. That's not halachically correct. You know, that the child who's born to this Yibum marriage somehow is in any way expected to actually have the name, to be named after the brother who passed away. So we'll come back a little bit, we'll see what the Ramban himself explains as being the idea behind Yibum. A very, very off-quoted Ramban that we have over here. Very somewhat obscure Ramban, difficult to understand. But, you know, perhaps in light of the Ramban's own explanation, there's a way to go back and interpret what Rashi himself means. Va'od, right? Furthermore, Sha'omar va'yeda Onan kilo lo yihya hazora. The pasuk says that although Onan was given these instructions, marry Tamar, be with her, produce a child, and that child will carry the name or the legacy, Yakum Hashem Achiv Hames, he will, you know, carry forward the legacy of your departed brother, heir, who passed away. So the pasuk then goes on to say, Onan knew that the child would not be his, that's the lashon of the Torah, ki lo lo yihyeh hazara, Onan knew that the kid that he would have with Tamar would not really be his, and therefore, you know, when he was with Tamar intimately, he made a point of, you know, acting in such a way that he would not impregnate her, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that's a bad thing, and, you know, Onan as well dies because of his reluctance to have a child with Tamar. So what does it mean, asked the Ramban, that Onan knew that the child would not be his? Mahara shertovo alav ad ki hishchis zaro miponeha im yikro shem bino kishem achiv hames. According to Rashi, we would believe, says the Ramban, that what bothered Onan so much is that he's going to have a child with Tamar, and the kid is going to be named heir after his dead brother. And that bothered Onan so much that he took steps to make sure that Tamar would not be impregnated. So ask the Ramban, so what's so terrible? No, so if, meaning, what's so terrible from Onan's perspective? He doesn't know how want to have a little kid named heir. It's a lot easier, you know, when you're filling out forms. You know, it's a two-letter name, I and Reish. You know, it's done. You know, it's very, very easy to sign your name. What's so terrible? It's so terrible having a child who'll be named after your deceased brother that you don't want to have a child because of that? It just seems bizarre. V'rov b'nei adam mis'avim lasos kein. Most people would be very happy to name a child after a relative who passed away.
Right? By the way, it's interesting to note the Ramban was a Sfaradi, and we know today the prevalent Sfaradi minog is that the Sfaradim like to name after living relatives, you know, living grandparents and the like, in order to be mechabed them. The impression you have from this Ramban is that at least in his time in Spain in the 1200s, the common custom was to name after the deceased, you know, similar to the custom that Ashkenazim have today. Again, that's the impression you have from this Ramban. The Ramban says people are very anxious to name after relatives who passed away. V'lo Omer HaKosu Vayomer Onon Aval Omer Vayeda Onon Ki Lo Lo Yihye Hazara Ki Yediyu Brura Haisalo Bezesh Lo Yihye Lo Hazara. Another thing that's very striking, says the Ramban, is the pasuk doesn't say Onan said even to himself, the kid's not going to be mine, therefore I don't want to get Tamar pregnant. It says Vayeda Onan. Onan was convinced, he knew with 100% certainty that the child would not be his. In what sense did Onan know that the child would not be his? What does that mean exactly? Right? Usually, even when somebody thinks in the Chumash, we very often find the verb utilized as Vayomer. You know, Vayomer Alibo, he said to his heart, you know, he thought to himself. Here, Vayeda Onan. Onan knew that the child would not be his. How did he know that? How did he know that? Aval ho'inyin sod godo misodo satora betoldas ha'odo. What's going on over here, says the Ramban, is a great secret. Whenever the Ramban uses the term secret, he means it's a Kabbalistic, it's a mystical idea. There's a great mystical idea from one of the mysteries of the Torah that's being discussed here in this context, betoldas ha'odam, that relates to man and his offspring, to the birthing of man. V'nikar hu le'enei ro'im asher nosan lohem Hashem einayim lir'os v'oznayim lishmoa. And it's something that people, onlookers, can discern as long as HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the eyes to see and the ears to hear. In other words, the mystical secret which is going on over here, which underlies this entire discussion, is something that people who are attuned to this phenomena can recognize as well. V'hoyu ha-chachomim ha-kadmonim kodim ha-torah yodim ki yesh to'elas gedolo b'yubum ha'ach. You should know, it's not the Torah that made up the idea of Yibum. The idea of Yibum, again, marrying a widow who passed away without children, the notion that that was not only something permissible, but desirable, was something that was known to the early generations many, many years before the Torah was revealed. V'hoya roi lios kodem bo the Achrav HaKarav B'Mishpacha. And people understood that a brother has first dibs at marrying his widowed sister-in-law, that somehow is something ideal. And if the brother won't do it, they understood that there is something very positive about another relative marrying that widowed individual. In other words, what we see going on in Megillas Rus is not actual Yibum. Again, you know, Boaz was not the brother of Mahlon, but it's what we'll call a quasi-Yibum. You know, Boaz is a relative of Mahlon's, and there is something positive about Boaz marrying Mahlon's widow Rus. What is that thing? Ki kol she'ero indeed, any relative who's related in some way to this widow, yagia mimenu tuelas, there is something positive that happens when that relative marries the widow. And because of that, v'hayu noagim lisa eishes hames ha'ach o ha'av o ha'karav min ha'mishpacha. Even in these pre-Matan Torah days, people had the custom to marry off a brother to a widow, or a father-in-law to a widow. Again, that's what's happening in our parasha as well. After all of the brothers of Er are incapable, for whatever reason, of having a child, with Tamar. Tamar ends up entering into a relationship with her father-in-law, with Yehuda, and producing two children from him. So again, that's also not traditional Yibum. In fact, that's prohibited, you know, according to Torah law. But, you know, in this pre-Matan Torah era, the generations understood that that was a positive thing. And had Yehuda not been available for whatever reason, so then it sounds like Tamar would have tried to find some other relative in order to have a quasi-Yibum-like relationship with that person. The only thing which is not clear, says the Ramban, is it's not clear whether pre-Yehuda this custom existed. In other words, maybe this story in the Torah is the first time that Yibum of any sort is being introduced, but it's certainly being introduced over here, and it's certainly something that carried forward in the successive generations. Ubebreshis Rabba Amruk Yehuda Hischa B'mitzvus Yibum Tchila. You should know, the Medrash says the Ramban, that Yehuda was the first one to institute this practice of doing Yibum. Ki kasher kibel hasod me'avosov nizdareis lahakim osa. Yehuda received this mystical tradition from his forefathers as to the effectiveness of Yibum. Again, we still don't know what that is exactly, but there's this tradition based on mysticism that Yibum does something very, very powerful. Yehuda received this tradition. So Yehuda was the first one to introduce this mitzvah of Yibun in a practical sense, and then it all flowed from there. The Kasher Basa HaTorah V'Asra Eishes Ksas HaKrovim. So how does Yibun work once the Torah is revealed? So again, I think intuitively we think the Torah is revealed and introduces this idea called Yibun. But the Ramban says no, the idea of Yibun was something that predated the Torah. What the Torah actually did is that the Torah limited the idea of Yibum. Because prior to the giving of the Torah, Yibum applied to a whole host of different relatives. But after the Torah was given, so many of those relatives are not allowed to marry the widow anymore. Again, take the example of Yehuda and Tamar. After the Torah was given, Yehuda would not have been allowed to marry Tamar. So what the Torah did, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu Lahatir Yisr Eishes Ha'achim Nei Yibum. The truth is, you know, if a woman dies and she has children, she's actually not allowed to marry her former brother-in-law, right? So the Torah limited many of the options for Yibum, but even with the restrictions placed on who could marry this widow, the Torah wanted to leave one door open to enable Yibum to take place. So it said, you know, if the brother, you know, who according to the Ramban, the maximum benefit from the Yibum is achieved through the brother still has the ability to marry his sister-in-law after her husband's death. The Torah didn't want to allow all the different forms of Yibum that had existed pre-Matan Torah, but the common practice even pre-Matan Torah was for a brother to marry his widowed sister-in-law, Fatoelis Krova, and that also brings about the greatest benefit in terms of what Yibum accomplishes. So therefore, the Torah left that ability intact, even though other forms of Yibum were prohibited by the Torah. Indeed, V'hinei nechshav l'achzarius gedolo be'ach, kasher lo yachpos liyabim. That's why we find when the Torah in Parshas Kisetze speaks about the brother who doesn't want to do Yibum, the Torah describes that individual in really terrible terms. You know, here's this person who refuses to continue the legacy of his brother. And the whole ceremony of Chalitza basically is, in many ways, a way of shaming the brother who doesn't want to engage in Yibum. Nowadays, we have the practice that we never do Yibum. We only do Chalitza. Right? But, you know, you read the Torah, again, that's for various reasons. You know, we're afraid that the Yavam's not going to have really altruistic motives, you know, but be that as it may, when you read the Torah, the simple pshat in the Torah is, the ideal is to do Yibum, because of all the wonderful things it brings. Again, we haven't gotten to it yet. And then Chalitza is the kind of way of shaming the person who's reluctant to do Yibum, and, you know, doesn't want to carry out this way for, you know, this way of doing things. And it's almost as if the presence of Chalitza is the way of encouraging the person to do Yibum, because otherwise you'll be subjected to this very humiliating ceremony known as Chalitza. V'royuhu, okay, fine. V'chachme Yisrael kadmon midaitam ha'inyon hanichbod hazeh. V'chachme Yisrael, the Jewish sages, understanding how incredible Yibum is, they started a custom that Yibum should apply, not by law, but by custom, to other relatives who were allowed to marry the widow. Again, many relatives are not allowed to marry the widow, but relatives who are not close enough to be prohibited from marrying the widow, they should marry the widow. But osam shloyeh bohem iser hasheir, v'karu osal geula. They refer, Chazal or the Chachamim referred to that process as geula, as redemption. V'zeu inyan Boaz v'tam Naomi v'ashchenos. And this explains Boaz, why Boaz was anxious to marry Ruth in order to perpetuate the legacy of Mahlon. And this also explains what happened with Naomi and with all of the neighbors. What happened with Naomi and all of her neighbors? So the Megillas Ruth says at the very end that after Boaz and Ruth have a child, so all of the neighbors come and they coo over the child. But among other things, they say, "Yulad bein le Naomi." Now a boy has been born to Naomi. What do you mean a boy has been born to Naomi? A boy hasn't been born to Naomi. A boy has been born to Ruth, right? What's that? Okay, so one explanation might be, okay, so she took care of him, right? She was a doting grandmother. But the Ramban is saying a little bit differently. The Ramban is saying, since Naomi's son Mahlon had died without children, and this child on some level is considered to be the legacy of Mahlon, again through this form of Yibum, so it's as if Naomi literally now has a child, because this child is perpetuating the legacy of Mahlon. That's the way the Ramban understands over here. For Hamaskil Yavin, and those who are wise will understand what I mean. So you always feel a little bit silly when, you know, someone like the Ramban writes Hamaskil Yavin, and then you say to yourself, I have no idea what he's talking about, because I guess I must not be from one of those wise people that he's talking about. So what is he talking about? Yibum is wonderful. Yibum is amazing. Yibum does the best things. You know, you should, you know, it's amazing. So the way the Ramban is traditionally understood is that the Ramban here is hinting at the idea of Gilgul Neshamos, of the reincarnations of souls. Again, it's not explicit in the Ramban, but the Ramban does speak in his commentary on Eov about something, some kind of mystery that explains why bad things happen to good people. And there too, the Ramban is traditionally understood as saying that he is talking about the idea of Gilgul. That the Ramban is one of the early sources we have that talks about the idea of Gilgul Neshamos, of reincarnations of the soul. And if we accept that explanation, what the Ramban over here is saying is as follows. You know, let's take the example of Er and Onan. Er passed away without children. So how are we going to perpetuate not just Er's name and legacy, but how can we perpetuate Er himself? If Er were to have a child biologically, so that child would perpetuate all the things associated with Er. But now Er doesn't have a child. So when Onan, a close relative, marries Er's widow, Tamar, and they have a child together, the neshama, which was Er's neshama, is going to be misgalgil, it's going to be reincarnated in this baby who was born to Onan and Tamar. In that sense, that's what the pasuk means, that hakeim zera le'achicha, perpetuate seed for your child, and that's why Onan is so reluctant to marry Tamar. Ki lo lo yi yazara. The child's not going to be his. What do you mean the child's not going to be his? Right? The child is his. And he's even going to name the child something different than Er. Yeah, but the neshama of this child is going to be a neshama that comes from your brother. It's not going to be a neshama that passes down through your family directly. And knowing this idea, Onan is so bothered by this that he says, it's not worth it for me to get Tamar pregnant if the child that I'm going to have spiritually, really on some level, belongs to the line of my brother and not to my own line. Right? This works best with two brothers, but the way the Ramban explains it, this way of channeling the neshama of the deceased into a different line of the family can also work with relatives who are further away, but I guess, again reading into the Ramban a little bit, it works not as well the further away from the original deceased you get. So in other words, two brothers can make it work. If you're a second cousin three times removed, it may work, but maybe doesn't work to quite the same extent. And that's, again, I want to emphasize, this is the way the Ramban is understood by very, very, very early Mefarshim of the Ramban, Rabbi Nebuchai, the Rakanati, and others. Some people have proposed other ways of reading this Ramban, because the truth is, the Ramban doesn't really tell you. I mean, the word Gilgal is not to be found in the Ramban at all. The Ramban doesn't really tell you what this mystical secret is that Yibum accomplishes. A few years ago, somebody wrote an article where he claimed that the Ramban is just means that the genetics, let's talk about genetics, it's not talking about anything mystical altogether, the genetics will be continued through the line of the brother. Maybe yeah, maybe no. Again, you know, you can... Certainly the early Mefarshim, the Ramban, did not understand the Ramban that way. They understood the Ramban's talking about something mystical and not something not something biological that he's describing over here. But again, the Ramban's language itself is ambiguous enough that it leaves itself open to different interpretations. As Hashem, when we pick up after Ma'ariv, we'll see another Ramban, less mystical than this Ramban, but this is a well-known Ramban, so it's important to see it. We'll see another Ramban where he talks about a practice that we have to this day, which stems from an incident a little bit later on in the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Zakul. Welcome to the second half of the Shir, Ramban Parashas Vayeshev. So, again, the first part of the Shir, we spoke about this whole unusual concept of Yibum as it manifests itself in the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Towards the end of the story, of course, Yehuda unwittingly makes Tamar pregnant. She gives birth, and it says that there are twins. Okay. Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Chav Ches. When Tamar gave birth, Vayiten Yad. So one of the children stuck his hand out. Vatikacham yaledes vatikshal yadish al yado shani leimar zayatsa rishona. So the nurse sticks a crimson cord on his hand to say, okay, of the two children, this is the firstborn. Vayikemeshiv yado. But then all of a sudden, this hand which had been stuck out gets pulled back. Vinei yatsa achiv, his brother. All of a sudden jumps to the head of the line and his brother emerges first. Vatomer, so the nurse says, Ma poratzta alecha paretz. Ooh, look how you broke through the line. Vayikra shmo paretz. And she called his name Peretz. V'achar yotza achiv asher al yado ashani. And then the remaining brother, who still had the crimson cord tied around his hand, so he came out next. Vayikra shmo zerach. And he was called Zerach, Peretz, and then Zerach. What's the significance of these names? So, the Ramban in Pasuk Chav Tetz writes as follows: Ma poratzta alecha Peretz. The nurse said, when Peretz emerged from the womb, look at how you have broken something. Ma poratzta alecha Peretz. So, what does that mean? So Rashi writes, Chazakta alecha chozek. Look at how you have acted in a strong-armed kind of way. Right, that's Rashi's interpretation. Look how you forced your way to the front. So the Ramban himself writes, V'inyan peretz b'chomakom netitzas hageder v'avro. The Ramban gives a slightly different explanation, again, more along the lines that we just hinted at a few moments ago. The Ramban says, Peretz, whenever it's used, implies a breach, breaching something. And he says, you know, we find Chazal in Masech Tesukah say, Pirtza Kara Laganov, a breach calls out for a thief to come in. In other words, if you leave the window open, you know, so someone's going to come in and, you know, make use of that. Avo yomar beloshen hakodesh al kol over gvul hadavar uforatsta yama vokeitma. We also find in Hebrew that the word lithrot can mean not only to breach but to go beyond boundaries. So, for instance, Yaakov Avinu was promised uforatsta yama vokeitma. You will spread out. Why is the word for spreading out parats? Because parats means you'll go over the boundary. Normally, a person would be bound by the boundaries which contained that person. Here the person is going to spread out. Klal Yisrael will spread out beyond the boundaries, or Vayifrot Soish Ma'od Ma'od. Yaakov Avinu in last week's Sedra was described after his years in the house of Lavan as being very, very rich. He's rich beyond the normal boundaries. You know, that's the usage of the word parents. V'lochein Omar Bekan V'yos HaRishon K'meshev Yod V'humi Herlot says Ma Porasto Peretz Godo begeder lemaher lotseis kodem imenu. Right, that's why when the second child bursts out, he skips the line and jumps out of the womb even before his brother, who had begun to emerge. That's why he's called Peretz, the breach, the one who, you know, broke the fence, so to speak, and going to the head of the line. Uvimidrasho sherebi nechunia ben akane. In the Medrash associated with Rabbi Nechuna ben Akana, Rabbi Nechuna ben Akana is one of the Tanoim, and there's a Sefer called the Sefer HaBahir, which is an ancient book of Kabbalah, which is attributed to Rabbi Nechuna ben Akana. So in that ancient book of Kabbalah, we find the following. This is Kabbalah evening, you know, in the Parashas HaShavua Shia. Yazkir Sod, b'shem Eila HaYiludim. The Rabbi Nechuna ben Akana points to something mystical that attaches itself to the names of these children, Peretz and Zerach. Amru, so it says over there that the child who came out second is Ikri Zerach, he was called Zerach. Ashem Hachama Shehi Zorachas Tomid. The word Zerach is related to the word Lizroach, which means to shine. So this second child was referred to as Zerach to remind us of the sun that is always shining. Uperetz al shem halavana shenifretzas leitim venivnes leitim. Peretz, however, breach, is a reference, was so called as a reference to the moon, because the moon sometimes is breached and sometimes built up. Now, what this means is as follows. I mean, the sun doesn't shine all the time. I've been in here in this building for the whole afternoon, so I don't know what the weather's like outside, but my impression is, based on the email and text alerts I've been getting every 20 minutes or so, is that the sun is not shining right now. In fact, even if it was shining, it certainly wouldn't be shining because it's night, right? But the sun shines always in the sense that the orb of the sun is always full, as opposed to the moon, which waxes and wanes. In other words, so the moon is referred to as Peretz, because it's sometimes breached and sometimes built. It waxes and wanes. The sun is called Zerach, because it doesn't wax and wane. You know, the orb is always going to be a full orb. So, good, okay. So these kids are basically called sun and moon. Okay, so what's the significance of that? Vare Peretz wa b'chor, right? Peretz came out first. V'achama gedola min halavana. So it's a little bit odd because we refer to the sun as the ma'or hagadol, right? It's the bigger of the two luminaries. So you'd expect sun to be born before moon, i.e., Zerach to be born before Peretz, and here Peretz comes out before Zerach. In other words, the moon makes its appearance before the sun. What's the significance of that? Lo kasha. Don't be bothered by this, says the Medrash. Because we see that the truth is Zerach was supposed to come out first. Zerach stuck his hand out first. So in other words, in a certain sense,
he sort of was the older brother. It's just that Peretz, the moon brother, jumped the line and came out first in actuality, even though Zerach's sun brother was supposed to come out first. Okay, so that's interesting, but what does it mean? So he writes as follows. V'hine l'daitam, what the Medrash of the Sefer Bahir is trying to get at is the following. Ha'yoshem ha'levono l'peretz, b'pnei malchus beis David. The brother who's called Peretz, again hinting at the moon, is representative of the Malchus Beis David. In fact, we know that, again, as we referenced before, at the end of Megillas Rus, Peretz is one of the ancestors of David HaMelech, this very Peretz that we read about here. The sun and the moon were twins because, in a sense, the sun and the moon in our reality are also twins. They're twin luminaries. Peretz, which represents the moon, is a twin to Zerach, who stuck his hand out first. And Peretz is the firstborn, but he was only the firstborn because God gave him the power to be the firstborn. As the pasuk says, Hashem says about Klal Yisrael, I will make them the Bechor. I will make them the firstborn. What do you mean, I'll make them the firstborn? In other words, you shouldn't have been the firstborn. You were sort of bumped to the head of the line. V'zel ma'amorom b'kiddush ha'chodesh. And this is what it means when we do Kiddush Levana once a month, that we say as part of Kiddush Levana, David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom, that we talk about how David, the king of Israel, is alive and well. And he who is wise will understand what I'm talking about. What's that? Yeah, right. So here we are, twice in one night, you know, just coming face to face with the fact that we know nothing. Okay, so it's a little bit humbling. Let's take a stab and try to understand, at least on some level, what's going on over here. Right? The moon clearly is associated with the Malchus Beis David, right? And by extension with the Jewish people as a whole. The sun is associated with the world at large, the nations of the world. Witness the fact that most of the nations of the world utilize some form of a solar calendar, right? And the sun is supposed to be representative of the nations of the world insofar as you don't have this constant waxing and waning which is associated with the moon. In other words, you know, the large non-Jewish world which is out there is big, it's populous, it's successful, and that's what the sun represents. By all rights, you would think that the sun has priority over the moon. You know, in other words, that the vast non-Jewish nations that are out there have precedence over the small persecuted Jewish nation. So in other words, it would have made sense for Zerach's son to have come out before Peretz, before the moon. That would have been logical, that would have been representative of the way history works. Against all odds, Peretz jumps to the head of the line. Against all odds, against all logic, the Jewish people are granted the status of the Bechor, of the firstborn. It doesn't make sense. It should have been Zerach. Zerach was sticking his hand out first. But the Jewish people, represented by the moon, which waxes and wanes, which ultimately represents the dynasty of David, the rulership of Klal Yisrael, somehow finds itself at the beginning of the line and somehow finds itself with the Bechor. In a sense, this whole story describing the birth of the children is in many ways symbolic of how Klal Yisrael, against all odds, not only survives, but finds itself at the end of days in the Messianic period as being the preeminent nation among the nations of the world. And of course, the vehicle which is going to bring that out is the Malchus Beis David, you know, the kingdom of David HaMelech, which is represented by the moon. All of this comes to play by Kiddush Levana. Why do we make such a big deal about Kiddush Levana? Right, we say in Kiddush Levana itself Right, that Kiddush Levana represents a once a month opportunity to receive the divine presence. A once in a month opportunity to receive the divine presence. I thought it just means we go out and we shiver for like 10 minutes. You know, while we say something from a car. You know, I mean, what do you mean to receive the divine presence? What's the big deal over here? The answer seems to lie in the fact that once the moon represents the waxing and the waning of the Jewish people, and you know, we associate the fact that the moon comes back every month with the fact that the Jewish people can never be put down, and the fact that the Malchus Beis David in the end of the day is going to reign supreme and is going to bring us to a place of greater heights. All of that is hinted at you know, with Kiddush Levana. What, by the way, what do we say in Kiddush Levana as part of our tefillos? We look forward to that day where Or HaLevana will be Ka'or HaChama, where the light of the moon will be like the light of the sun. The light of the moon is going to be like the light of the sun. Well, what are you talking about, you know? So again, it's the symbolism. In other words, even though right now the moon's light waxes and wanes, i.e. the Jewish people sometimes are up and sometimes are down, there'll come a time where the Jewish people are going to be constantly up like the sun. We're not going to wax and wane anymore. And that's the day we're looking forward to. Hence, says the Ramban, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. That's why that's part of the Kiddush Levana recitation. Because, you know, our monthly revisiting of the moon is really an expression of faith that David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, that even though the Davidic dynasty is not active, but it's still here, and there's going to come a day where it's going to be restored. And all of that is represented by Peretz's sudden ascendancy over Zerach, you know, something that went against all odds and is represented over here in the story of the twins' birth.
That means that's going to be the order of moon of God upon. It's going to be daytime, evening, and night.
Right, so again, according to what we're saying now, no, it doesn't mean, you know, in a literal sense, it doesn't mean that you won't be able to go to sleep at night. The sun's still out. It's unbelievable. Right? It's not going to be like, you know, the North Pole for everybody the whole year round. But it means that Klal Yisrael is going to be on top and it's not going to be brought down again. Klal Yisrael's fates are not going to be constantly up and down the way they are in this world, you know, prior to the coming of Mashiach.
So, the analogy doesn't exactly hold. So the moon, on a regular basis, you know, it comes and goes, it waxes and waxes, once a month, it waxes, once a month, it waxes. David and Melech, so David waxed, and his son maybe Shlomo waxed, but it's been waning.
A lot of waning since then.
Ever since.
Right, yeah.
And then what's going to happen? Then Mashiach will come, great, and then Mashiach will...
No, so at that point, when Mashiach comes, so that's Vahoya or Halavaraka or Akama. That's going to be constant. I think the waxing and waning is less about the Malchus Beis David over history, because again, it's gone, you know, it's doing a lot of waning, not a lot of waxing. But, you know, more about sort of the fate of the Jewish people, which is represented in many ways by the Malchus Beis David. You know, we're up and we're down. You know, it's the best of times, then it's the worst of times, then it's the best of times, then it's the worst of times. You know, the cycle of Jewish history is kind of like an EKG exam. You know, up and down and up and down and up and
but
down.
But we aspire to be like the sun, or we aspire to be... I mean, which is the better? The moon or the sun? Or
well, in other words, right now the moon represents our fate, and we accept that fate, and you know, the fact that the moon pushed out in front of the sun, you know, is something supposed to be reassuring to the Jewish people. But there'll come a time where we too will be transformed into the sun, in the sense that once the Jewish people are ascended in the time of Mashiach, that's not going to wane. You know, that's going to be a constant orb, just like the sun.
But if the analogy was made that if the Jewish people are like the moons and the rest of the nations are like the sun,
right,
and then we're going to be like the sun, so we're going to be like the rest of the nations?
Right, so at that point, their, you know, their analogy to the sun is going to cease to exist. Again, what they're going to be analogous to, it's not entirely clear, but, you know, certainly the ascendancy of Klal Yisrael at that time is going to be something which is going to be permanent. So that's what Ramban is also writing. You know, this whole story with Peretz and Zerach is more symbolic than we think. You know, it's not just a story about the birth of two children, but, you know, it hints that this greater vision of what Jewish history is all going to be about, and it's something that, you know, plays a role in our tefillos every month, as we, you know, we say David Melchisel Chai V'Kayim. Okay, we'll pick up as Hashem next week, and.